I'm Chance Storland, and this is The Docket, our weekly interview program covering law and crime in San Antonio and Bexar County from expressnews.com. A familiar case has come back again, this time a not guilty verdict in the brutal stabbing and shooting deaths of a man and woman in 2016, reportedly over a pack of cigarettes. I'm joined now by San Antonio Express News courts and crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala to learn more about these recent updates. And Liz, of course, thank you as always for joining me here on the podcast. We have discussed the deaths of Rodney Spring and Quickether Jackson, two people who were shot and stabbed in a West Side apartment complex before here on the podcast. And the defendant, Luis Antonio Arroyo, has been tried before. But let's start here with a quick refresher on this case before we get to these new updates.
Great to be back, Chance. Well, last year, as you'll recall, Luis Antonio Arroyo went to trial. And back then, he was accused of capital murder multiple persons in the killings of Rodney Spring and Quickether Jackson, as you said. And this was an attack that also wounded Quickether's mother, Tandalyn Jackson. And the trial was completed, and jurors deliberated 10 hours over 2 days. And once they told Judge Kevin O'Connell that they were hopelessly deadlocked, he had no choice but to declare a mistrial.
This was a shooting and a stabbing, and the circumstances or motives in these killings, of course, would be very important. Weren't the Jacksons friends with Arroyo?
Yes, Chance. When Tandalyn Jackson testified, and, you know, we've now heard her say this twice, she told the court that Arroyo would go to her house almost daily to play games or to watch movies. And she even said that she called him Tony. And she also said that one of the things that they did together was they smoked crack. So she emerged as the star witness for the prosecution in both of these cases. In fact, prosecutors back last year and even this year called her a living witness because she testified that the day of the attack, she believed Arroyo stole a pack of cigarettes from her, and she went to confront him about it at his apartment, which wasn't very far from where she lived with her daughter. And later on that day, she said Tony Arroyo showed up at the apartment, banging on the door, and Tandalyn Jackson was stabbed and she was shot. And while all of this occurred, one of the things that I think we talked about last time that came out in trial this time also was the playing of the 911 tape. And Tandalyn Jackson can be heard on 911 saying, Tony, please don't hurt me. So as this was happening to her, as we were listening to this 911 account, Rodney Spring, at some point, had been shot once in the back inside the apartment, and Quickether Jackson was shot 5 times and stabbed 3 times in the apartment. So very brutal, personal type of killing that happened here.
And that capital murder case actually ended in a mistrial. How was it tried this time? I'm wondering if there was anything that was different.
Well, yes, Chance. Judge Kevin O'Connell heard the case in the 227th State District Court, where he is the presiding judge back then. This time, we had visiting judge Mark Luchin as the presiding judge over this trial. And this time, the Bexar County District Attorney's Office tried this case as a murder instead of a capital offense. And, you know, just in talking to some people at the courthouse about it, it was obvious that the jury last time, they were split right down the middle. 6 felt that he was guilty and 6 felt that he wasn't. And with capital murders, there are only two choices for punishment. You either get life without the possibility of parole or the death penalty. And these are decisions that jurors find, you know, they have a really hard time with, you know, holding someone's life in your hands. So, you know, for instance, when the jurors were hopelessly deadlocked last time, they were very upset. There were tears. You could see it from the gallery. People were very emotional that they were, that basically they were taking this case and they were having to give it back to the judge to put back, you know, go back to where they started again with the DA's office. So even if jurors don't want to put someone to death, they also may not want to put them away forever. So this time, you know, again, the Bexar County District Attorney's Office decided to try this as a murder case. And, but, you know, the jury ended up almost deliberating pretty close to the same amount as that jury last time did. They were pretty close to 10 hours over 2 days as well. But then, of course, this time, instead of having a mistrial and having to go back, this time the jury came back with a not guilty verdict on both of those counts.
So, Elizabeth, some slightly different circumstances for the retrial, as you just pointed out. But what about the defense attorneys? Was that different at all?
Well, you know, Chance Arroyo had with him the same two men who defended him before, Raymond Fuchs and Joel Perez. Now, as they did last time, this time around, they focused also on the fact that they believed that investigators in this case didn't really do the job that they were supposed to and follow up on leads in the case. You know, when we were seeing photographs of different, you know, the crime scene and how different things went on, you know, on cross-examination, the defense attorneys would come back and say, well, was this checked or was this checked or was this checked? And in some cases, you know, there were things that had been taken and were reviewed, you know, as far as for evidence was concerned. But you know, not everything. And then another, for instance, if you will, there were several Tony Arroyos in the area, the attorneys pointed out. And then one witness also testified that they saw a tall, dark man running down a nearby street around the time that the shooting and stabbing had occurred. So, you know, all of this begins to build, you know, whenever defense attorneys are on, you know, they're cross-examining witnesses or else even, you know, in statements that they make at the beginning or at the end of the case. And, you know, I think that the most common denominator and the biggest thing that they argued was that Tandalyn Jackson admitted that she smoked crack that day and that she, you know, was a habitual smoker. And also that she had not been taking regular medication for specific ailments and even mental illness. So when a defense expert testified, bringing up, you know, hallucinations and illusions that can be brought on by the use of crack cocaine, they really hammered that point to the jury. And, you know, at least as an observer in the courtroom, this jury of 10 women and two men paid a lot of attention, and I believe they listened more to the arguments of the defense than they did the prosecution.
Elizabeth, when we discuss cases here on the Docket Podcast, there is often a detail or even more than one detail that really makes a case stick out to me. That's the case here as well. Wasn't Arroyo part of a jailbreak that has netted him some prison time, even though he wasn't convicted here in this trial?
Yes, Chance. This was, he was part of a trio of people who escaped briefly from the Bexar County Jail, and I'm going to focus on the word briefly because if memory serves me, these three men were basically out maybe for about an hour. So Arroyo and two other inmates who also were accused at that time of capital murder broke out of the jail a year ago by climbing 20 feet in a recreational area and cutting a hole in the mesh and using bed sheets to climb down onto a roof outside. And again, their brief stint of about an hour outside the jail cost Luis Antonio Arroyo 99 years, because that is what a jury gave him for this breaking out of a correctional facility charge when he went to trial a few months ago.
Elizabeth, as I've pointed out many times before here on the podcast, I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer, but you cover courts and crime for the Express News. Did this fact that there was a prison break involving Arroyo make its way into this most recent trial where he was acquitted? It makes you wonder, if someone is claiming to be innocent of a crime, why break out of jail? Now, obviously, there could be circumstances. Someone might say, oh, I didn't think I would get a fair trial. I thought that the evidence looked bad and maybe I would be convicted. But just on face value, that doesn't look good, I think, to prospective jurors in a murder trial.
Well, Chance, you know, I would agree with you there. I haven't served on a jury in a long time, and because of what I do, I probably won't anytime soon. But that actually was brought up in court. And in fact, you said it almost exactly the way that one of the prosecutors pointed out in closing arguments, that if he indeed was innocent or not guilty of this particular crime, why is he breaking out of the jail with two other people? And, you know, that was a point that was argued. And when I heard that, I thought, well, gosh, you know, that might make someone go, if they're already leaning one way, you know, personally, they may go all the way to the other side, because it seems like a valid question that anybody would have. If you have, you know, nothing to hide, why are you getting upset with people asking you questions? Or if you didn't do anything wrong, why are you breaking out of the jail and, in a sense, doing something else that, you know, is going to hit you at the end, you know, with a long prison sentence?
And did the defense have an answer to that question?
Well, you know, the defense has had always maintained from the beginning that he was not guilty in this particular crime. You know, he was not guilty of killing two people, that there was no evidence, that really clear cut evidence that showed that he did it. But I don't really recall that they ever really addressed that issue to the jury.
Well, be that as it may, he ended up receiving 99 years in prison for breaking out of a correctional facility, even though he was not convicted of these murders. What do you think of that sentence? Obviously, that could be longer than what other people in the past have received for murders in the area.
Well, you know, I believe that it is quite a jump. It is, you know, extreme. Court records indicate, though, that Arroyo has a lengthy criminal record that includes burglary, theft, criminal mischief, and possession of a controlled substance. So typically that type of offense might get someone 10 years in prison. But because he was found to be a habitual offender, and also the fact that he had pending capital murder charges that, you know, did end up being tried as a plain murder charge, that's still a felony. But because he was found to be a habitual offender and likely that that was hanging out there. He was sentenced in March to 99 years in that particular case of breaking out of a correctional facility.
So wrapping things up on this topic for today's episode, Elizabeth, we often talk about sentences and what that means actually in real time. If I remember correctly, that would almost always be half of the time for a sentence can be when you start thinking about parole. So Arroyo sentenced to 99 years in prison for the escape attempt. How long might he actually be serving time?
Well, he is going to be eligible for parole after serving 15 years of that 99-year sentence. So it's about a third. Now, again, that's before he'll be eligible for parole. So today he's 42. Doing the math, he could be 57 when he becomes eligible, though just because someone becomes eligible, it isn't always a guarantee.
And then finally, Elizabeth, before we say goodbye for today's episode, I know that there is at least one other detail that we can discuss. Oftentimes when the case is done and the verdict is read, that might be kind of the end of what you can say about it. But there actually is an interesting detail that took place with this case after, if you will, for lack of a better description, after it ended.
Right. You know, whenever there's a jury, you know, a panel that's seated and they complete their service, you know, the judge always thanks them. And, you know, in this case, I'm probably not going to forget about how these particular cases ended, because the first time when that jury deliberated 10 hours over 2 days, I mean, you could just really, really see on their faces that they had worked really, really hard. And they were very upset when Judge O'Connell had to declare a mistrial. Jurors were visibly upset. Many of them were crying. And, you know, it was just a very emotional thing for them. Well, this time around, same thing, except we had, of course, a different verdict, and we had a visiting judge. Judge Luchin announced the verdict, and Luis Antonio Arroyo openly wept in the courtroom. And when Judge Luchin explained that the panel service was over, he extended the invitation for them, as all judges do, to stick around and talk to the judge. And this happens many times. Many times the jurors will stay and they will... all of them will say, and they will ask the judge questions. They'll get asked questions from prosecutors or from defense attorneys. A lot of times they're going to want to kind of see, you know, what was the difference. And this is just stuff that I've heard, because obviously I don't have any contact with jurors. But this time around, Chance, none of these jurors stayed. I mean, it was, I heard from some courthouse observers that as soon as they were done, they went back to the jury room, they grabbed their stuff, and they left. And it was so quick and through a back entrance that I thought that was just, I mean, it was pretty obvious to me they were done and they wanted out. They didn't want to talk to anybody. They didn't want to give any feedback, and they certainly didn't want to have any questions answered. So, you know, anybody who ever... says that jury duty is no big deal. It actually is, because these people who spend time on a jury to decide, you know, the fate of a peer in a crime, you know, they deserve a lot of respect, and judges give them a lot of respect for that.
And thank you to San Antonio Express News Courts and crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala for joining me for today's episode of The Docket, our weekly interview program covering law and crime in San Antonio from expressnews.com. For the San Antonio Express News, I'm Chance Dorland.